Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Former chief justices around the country are speaking out about judicial independence. They're part of the bipartisan alliance of former chief justices, and that includes Ohio's Maureen O'Connor. She served as chief justice from 2011 through 2022, the first woman to do so. And she's here today to talk about this initiative, the future of the judiciary, and will also reflect on her career of public service. Welcome to All Sides, Justice O'Connor.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, it doesn't sound like you have been doing much retiring after retirement here. I said you left the bench in 2022, but at a quick glance, you were involved in a lot of things. And I also read you got a puppy, so you're very busy.
Oh, yeah, I have a one-year-old puppy.
Yes, so that'll keep you busy. But let's start with this, the Alliance of Former Chief Justices. It's an initiative from a nonpartisan group that is called Keep Our Republic. The website says it focuses on initiatives that reinforce the guardrails of American democracy. So tell me why you decided to get involved in this alliance of former chief justices.
I was speaking with several of my colleagues, the former chief justice of Hawaii and Kansas and former chief justice of Texas. And we talked about, you know, this bringing together on a nonpartisan basis a group of chief justices, former chiefs, you know, we're all retired, so we have the ability to speak freely. And our judiciary in this country is under attack, okay? Individual judges, because of the opinions that they've rendered, and it's not just in the state courts, it's also in the federal courts. There is a group of retired federal judges who are in place, also working with Keep Our Republic, to respond to attacks on the federal judiciary. We're interested in attacks on state judges. And, you know, there's usually judges are all painted with one brush. But the public, I think, mostly understands that we have a state system and we have a federal system. And I always like to say that the federal judiciary, our federal court system, handles about 4% of the cases that are filed in this country, and 96% are filed with the state courts. So that gives you a perspective on how important the judges are in the United States, in the individual states. We're all selected differently. Some are elected. I was elected statewide to be on the Supreme Court. I was elected statewide to be the Chief Justice. Others are appointed and retained, et cetera. So there's a variety of methods for judges to attain their position. But they pretty much all do the same thing. They hear cases if they're on the trial level, and then they render decisions, opinions. They conduct jury trials. Then you have your appellate level, which if you're dissatisfied at the trial level, you can always appeal to the district court judges. They render opinion, and usually it stops there. Okay, very rarely do people want to go to the Supreme Court of the state. And we have guidelines, all courts do, on what type of cases we take in. We don't take in cases that are not of great public import or constitutional issues or that sort of thing. So the opinions get rendered and the decisions occur, and then people... It used to be just the parties attacked the judiciary, you know, and threatened judges, people who had a stake at the case. But now there is a danger that is, you know, being fomented against judges because of the rhetoric that's out there, not from the parties, not from opposing counsel. In these cases, but for people on high, elected officials. Our president is a perfect example. Started attacking the judiciary when he had the Trump University case. You know, that judge was of Hispanic descent. And for that reason, he was denigrated by Trump. And that opened the door for all of this negativity that is directed towards the judiciary.
Do you feel like people didn't speak out as directly before against judges, and President Trump kind of started it because that's how he speaks to everyone, basically?
It was more than Trump. Well, yes, it was the leadership of Trump and him opening the path for this. But the basis for his criticism of judges is he makes it on a personal level. Mm-hmm. He attacks them, because of...
as humans instead of for their ruling. Yeah,
precisely. Mm-hmm. And then he says such derogatory things. And then people who don't know any better or that like that sort of stuff, they pick up the gauntlet. And judges are the worst for it. I mean, we have judges who have been attacked, been shot, have to increase security, can't go places because of the threats, have to be looking over their shoulder. And these, again, are not parties to the case for the most part. They're people that are philosophically doing this.
Mm-hmm. In an open letter from your alliance that you belong to that they issued in December, it evokes comments from Founding Father, America's fourth president, James Madison. And it says, accumulating the immense powers of the government in the same hands may justly be pronounced as the very definition of tyranny. So I wanted you to talk about that, about the way that this was set up. It's supposed to be three branches of government, but... It seems like it's not. They're blending together more and more nowadays.
Well, they shouldn't be, if that is the perception. We're talking on the federal level right now. We have, obviously, the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. The legislative branch, our Congress, is pretty much inert. Mm-hmm. That's just my personal opinion. It is the opinion of anybody who is paying attention to what the Congress is not doing. And in fact, there was just something I read the other day that the Supreme Court just did the job of Congress with that opinion that they issued
about the tariffs.
Yes, mm-hmm. Which is something Congress should have intervened early on and said, hold it. Tariffs are our lane. But anyway, all this power is being concentrated in the executive branch. It is the antithesis of what our founding fathers believed in and thought they were setting up. However, they did recognize that could be a threat, that at some point there might be a person who would occupy the White House. Well, it wasn't the White House then, but mm-hmm. but be president and try to amass this power. And there have been presidents before that have tried to, as I said, step out of their lane and accumulate. For example, President Franklin Roosevelt wanted to pack the court, the Supreme Court. He didn't like the decisions. They were setting aside his decisions of, that were public works, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, well, we'll just put more justices on of mm-hmm. my choosing. It didn't work.
Right.
He wasn't allowed to do it. But that notion has, there is a life to it.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with former Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor. She's a part of the Alliance of Former Chief Justices advocating for judicial independence. I wanted to pivot to talk about elections a little bit. President Trump raised not just concerns, but alarm bells with his comments in early February about nationalizing elections. I want to play some audio and then have you comment. His first remarks came on a podcast where his former FBI director, and he said this.
The Republicans should say, we want to take over. We should take over the voting in at least 15 places. The Republicans ought to nationalize the voting.
And then on February 3rd, reporters at the White House asked him to elaborate, clarify what he meant. And then he said this.
I want to see elections, be honest. And if a state can't run an election, I think the people behind me should do something about it. Because, you know, if you think about it, a state is an agent for the federal government in elections. I don't know why the federal government doesn't do them anyway.
So what comes to mind when you hear these comments about the state is an agent of the federal government, there should be federal elections?
The one phrase that he said, I don't know why they don't do it, okay? Mm-hmm. He doesn't understand government. And that is at the heart of what's happening on the federal level. There's someone in office who, number one, is not there to be a public servant. We have so many people that are in elected positions that do not have the heart of a public servant. And I feel very, very strongly about that, having been a public servant, for decades. Mm-hmm. I know what it takes. I know what your view has to be. I know what your goals have to be. And they're lacking. And that is, I think, at the basis of why we hear things like we're going to federalize the state elections and the states are agents of the federal government. The states control, by design, the elections in their states. It preserves the independence of elections and the election process. We have 50 states, and they're not all the same. And that's another thing that is so misunderstood. You know, it's a cookie cutter. It's one size fits all. Why don't we just do it this way? No, we've got 50 states for a reason. And they do things differently. They all hold elections. I think the basis for the president's comments here is he believes that he won the election in 2020. And there is absolutely no evidence of that. And he will not accept it. And therefore, if the feds take over elections, they can be manipulated and, thy will be done. And you just can't do that.
Well, yeah, related to that, in January, the FBI raided an elections office in Georgia to investigate so-called discrepancies from the 2020 election. They seized 700 boxes of ballots. And this is in the lead up to the midterm elections. So as we're talking about, we're leading up to the midterm elections. They're going into an elections office in Georgia related to 2020. What are you paying attention to when it comes to all of this talk about elections as we head to the midterms?
I'm paying attention to the choices that we're going to have in the midterm. Here in Ohio, we're going to have elections for Congress, our congressional delegation. They're using a gerrymandered map. You know, we have gerrymandered maps on the books. After I retired December 31st, 2022, I told everybody I was going to take 4 months off and do absolutely nothing. I was going to do.
Did you do that?
Well, I wanted to see. The Italians have a phrase. It's il dolce far niente. It's the sweetness of doing nothing. And I wanted to find out what that felt like.
Okay.
My first redistricting meeting was the first week in January.
Of course,
of 2023.
Yeah, right.
And so I have no idea what it's like to
do nothing.
The sweetness of doing nothing. So, yeah, I am very much concerned about the fact that of gerrymandering and what has happened in the last year with regards to this country and gerrymandering and what was done in Ohio with this latest congressional map. And by the way, these are my opinions. You know, we started talking about the alliance of former chief justices, and that's one bucket that I'm, working and paying attention to. I have a lot of other roles that I play and or take on. And what I'm talking about now is, my observations. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to be on guard as to what's going to transpire this November. And the attempt to suppress the vote, which I think is going to be there.
Elections officials here in Ohio and other states, of course, but especially here in Ohio, they always maintain that we have safe and secure elections. How is Ohio's election system designed to protect voters, prevent political interference? I mean, do you feel like Ohio does do a good job with its elections?
I think Ohio does do a good job at the poll places. You know, people get in, they vote, et cetera. They have it down to a science on how that happens. Of course, people have to pay, have to produce identification. That's only fair. You know, I mean, we've all voted. You know how easy it is to walk in there and vote. Now, at one point, I stood in line for 2 hours to vote. You know, that was an election, presidential election years ago. But my point is that it's a system, and it's a system that works. And the misdirection to non-citizens voting is just that. It's a misdirection. It's an attempt to distract people and make them lose faith in our election. And when that is what the interference is going to be, to denigrate the election process, to call into question the validity of the elections, and then to deter people from actually going to the polling place and voting. And that is a very diabolical attempt to suppress the vote.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking with former Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor, about work she's been doing since she retired from the court. She's anything but retired. And we'll talk about some of the other groups that she's working with when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour with Maureen O'Connor, former Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court. She was the first woman to serve in that role from 2011 through 2022. She left the court due to mandatory age limits, and she's now a part of the Alliance of Former Chief Justices, advocating for judicial independence. Thank you again for being with us today, Justice O'Connor.
My pleasure.
An open letter issued by the Alliance emphasizes the distinction between judges who answer the rule of law and elected officials who serve in a specific district or an area. So judges are elected officials for the most part. Sometimes they're appointed. But why is it important to make that distinction, you know, that judges answer the rule of law and that's different than an elected official?
Well, I think we all have to pay attention to the rule of law. Mm-hmm. Okay. Elected officials, citizens. The rule of law is for everybody. It governs the governed, those that govern, and those that are governed. So the rule of law is paramount, all right? And people say, well, what is the rule of law? Mm-hmm. And the rule of law is just a combination of things. It is it's our institutions, it's our heritage, it's our culture, it's the way we the courts have operated, it's precedent, it's the law itself. And that takes, the concept is that you're faithful to the rule of law, you're not faithful to an individual or to a cause or if it conflicts with the rule of law. And the rule of law is meant to apply to everybody, so there's equality under the law. Due process applies to everybody. Due process is an institution. When you go to court, you're not rushed from, here's your appearance, and now you're going to be sentenced. No, there's got to be something that happens in between, doesn't there? Or you go to court, here you are, and by the way, your child just got taken away from you. What do you mean? There wasn't, okay, that's not the rule of law, and that's not due process. So the rule of law ensures that there is an institution and that things like due process takes place and your rights are protected. And, you know, it's they do whole courses in law school about the rule of law, and I'm just kind of, cramming it in right now. But, let's talk about the selection of judges.
Okay.
And what people, well, first of all, I'm not sure that everybody appreciates the role of a judge. People think, and this is because judges are elected, that they're political actors. Mm-hmm. That, and in our state, we have the political designation for both the Supreme Court candidates and for the appellate court candidates, which I think is a terrible, terrible practice, because it makes people, it reinforces, that person is a Democrat. Oh, that person is a Republican. What does that tell me?
It's a relatively new practice.
I mean,
the change on Ohio's ballot, the rule went into effect in 2021, meaning party affiliation for some judicial races, including the Supreme Court.
Right.
So there's a D for a Democrat next to the name, an R for a Republican.
Right.
So does that mean that anytime you ran, you never had that D or R?
Yeah, I never.
Right.
We're nonpartisan. That's what you're supposed to be. See, judges are supposed to be nonpartisan. If a judge pays attention to their political registration, to the will or wishes of their political party, to an elected office holder from a political party, and they bring that into the courtroom with them on how they make decisions, they don't deserve to sit on the bench or wear a robe. You don't bring politics, your political persuasions, into the courtroom. But people, because we have elections, and now because the legislature put those requirements, that the political designation, that reinforces in people's minds, they are politicians in robes. And I've heard that, many times. And that's just not the case. You would be violating judicial ethics if you let your politics interfere on how you do your job as a judge. A judge is the most important thing is for a judge to be independent. And I don't mean, and we talk about judicial independence, and I don't want to, independence sometimes has the wrong connotation that, they're sitting up there and they're independent and they can do whatever they want. That's what it means to be independent. Not at all.
Hmm.
You're independent of the pressures that I just talked about, the influences I just talked about. You operate independent of that sort of stuff. You don't let that seep into how you do your job, but you are dependent to the rule of law. You are faithful to the rule of law, how the law is written, how it's been interpreted by higher courts, and then how you have to apply it to the situation before you. That's what is meant by the independence of the judiciary. It should be, the non-influence of the judiciary. Mm-hmm. There can't be anything other than the rule of law. When I, during my last year, I think everybody knows that there were legal cases with regards to the redistricted maps. There were 7 redistrict maps, and I voted.
Oh, that little thing, yes.
Yeah, that they were unconstitutional 7 times. And it was the majority of the court voted that they were unconstitutional 7 times. Unfortunately, the federal court was also involved, and the federal court said, well, you know what, you have to have a map. So if you don't come up with a constitutional map by May 31st, then you're going to use the 3rd map. He's telling this to the Secretary of State. So do you think that the redistricting commission was motivated to come up with a constitutional map when they knew that they just had to wait the clock out and then they could use the 3rd unconstitutional map? So anyway, that's what happened. Some of the mail that I got, as a result of that, I saved it. It wasn't an overwhelming amount, but it was things like, you're a Republican. I voted for you because you're a Republican, and you're not voting like a Republican. I'm so disappointed. And why are you not voting? This was the tenor of the letters. And I said to myself, these people do not understand the role of a judge. Mm-hmm. Certainly not the role of the Supreme Court. That you're a puppet of a party? No.
You withstood a lot of criticism within your own party after making those decisions related to redistricting. In April of 2022, Secretary of State Frank LaRose did not back down from impeachment comments regarding you when asked about it. Here's what he said to the Ohio Capital Journal.
Someone asked me the question and I answered it honestly. I have concerns that the court has delved very deeply into politics and is starting to do things that are really not in the Constitution, like ordering us to have hired an out-of-state independent map maker and some of these other things. Again, that's up to the legislature to decide. All I said was that I would be fine with it.
So what did you make of all of those impeachment comments, having all of this, the members of the Republican Party mad at you for voting against these maps time and time again? What do you think of, how do you reflect back on that time?
Well, I didn't lose any sleep. They did things like take my picture down from party headquarters.
Well, I was going to get to that.
And
yeah.
Then so I think one local party turned my picture to the wall. You know, I mean, it's all political drama. You know, it didn't. I don't know what their intent was. Did they think I was going to be emotionally wounded by it? You know, absolutely not. I know that there were articles of impeachment drafted, you know, over in the legislature. What that tells me is that even our lawmakers don't understand our Constitution. Did they read it? I mean, there's no basis for impeaching someone, you know, based on their opinion, a judge, certainly not the Chief Justice. And I responded, well, I had three other people that voted the same way. Are you going to impeach them too? No, it was all directed at me. And it was all directed at me by, you know, these highly partisan Republican showboats.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with former Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor. I wanted to mention that we did reach out to the current Chief Justice, Sharon Kennedy, to invite her to be on the show at some point for her own one-on-one interview. Her office wrote back saying, thank you for the invitation and interest in the Supreme Court of Ohio. We are not able to accommodate an interview at this time, but appreciate the opportunity. And I just wanted to ask your opinion on that. Is it difficult for judges to give interviews? I mean, you said you're speaking here, you know, you're not in office. You're speaking for you, right? Do you think it's difficult for, I mean, I don't know whether, you know, Chief Justice Kennedy was busy or just doesn't want to come on the show. Either way, it doesn't matter. But like, can a current justice sitting on the court come and do an interview?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's guidelines, of course. Mm-hmm. You're not going to, for example, judges can't discuss cases that are coming in front of them and how they would vote on them, you know, or mm-hmm. even the merits of cases that are, you know, come before us. They can explain, if they want to, you know, the meaning of cases that they've already issued. But I don't think that's what you were talking about for an interview.
Right.
You'd want to know more about, you know, this initiative, maybe this program that the court is backing, or a change in, you know, something, a process. You know, yeah, there's a lot to talk about that. From, you know, if you're on the Supreme Court, if you're Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, you know, when I was on the court, I gave a lot of interviews, you know, on media, but also in person to groups, you know, explaining what we did during COVID, for example, mm-hmm. how the courts stayed open and how we were able to facilitate that the use of technology in the courts is
you're known for a lot of technological advances in the court. I mean, in your court, you know, a lot of things.
Well, happen. Not only at the, you know, the court, you know, here the Supreme Court, but we started this initiative that at the end of the fiscal year there was some money left over. Okay, and normally what you do is you give it back to the general revenue fund. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, keep in mind that the court's budget is like 1/10 or 2/10 of 1% of the state budget. That mm-hmm. tells you how, you know, how minimal. So there was a couple $1 million, you know, left over at the end of the year. And so I consistently granted that money for technology to the local courts. And it really helped the local courts because they don't have that kind of money from their cities, you know, or their counties. And when it was all said and done, I think that it was close to $40 million over the years that was granted. You know, I did not decide who got them. I had a panel of folks do the screening and looked at the projects they wanted. They were all, you know, meritorious, and they received the money, and they were able to up their game, you know. And then when COVID came around, they had the technology. So many of the courts had the technology that
they could
needed.
Do a Zoom.
Yes.
Yes, they could do a Zoom hearing and that kind of thing. Yes, rather than having to buy all the laptops and the routers from the scratch. Yeah,
right. Which they couldn't afford.
To circle back to redistricting for a moment, are you still following it? I mean, I know that you said that right after retiring, you took 1 week off and then you were back in the redistricting issue. Did you follow it this past time? Have you been keeping track of things?
Yes, I have. And so have other people. And
What do you think of the latest map? The Ohio Redistricting Commission is made up of 7 elected officials. They unanimously passed a congressional map last October. It increased the Republican advantage 12 of the 15 districts. That's up from 10. Democrats on the commission voted to adopt the map, saying, quote, they were in an impossible situation. This was the best map that they were going to get. So what did you think of that process?
Unfortunately, that attitude of, well, this is the best map we're going to get, so I'm going to vote for it. I don't agree with that. They could have made their statement that this is unconstitutional, and the map would have passed anyway, but you'd be on record as being consistent. You know, but that's water, you know, under the bridge at this point. I know there is an initiative. There's a lot of people that are talking about what are we going to do in 2027. It depends on what happens in 2026. Okay, and I think there's a lot of interest in the 26 election here in Ohio. I mean, you know, it's going to be an election for a governor and all the statewide office holders, and legislature and Congress, and it's an election that everybody needs to pay attention to.
When you think of gerrymandering, what do you think of the connection between gerrymandering and voter turnout? I mean, what do you think happens to a voter whenever they hear about these maps and the lines and who's representing them has changed 3 times in the past 6 years?
We don't have great voter turnout, do we, in this state? And midterm elections are dismal. And there's a drop off for elections for judges, which is, you know, another problem. But think about it. The vast majority of Ohioans are independents. OK, they're not registered Democrat or registered Republican. And those people have no representation in deciding who they can vote for in the general election because they don't participate in the primaries. Mm-hmm. So they feel, you know, they feel distanced. That they are irrelevant. And I've heard that so often from people about our election system. You know, my response to it is, well, that's the system we have right now, and you need to vote and vote for people that will change the system to make it so that, you know, the voice of the independents in the state are meaningful and considered. But I understand the thought process that it doesn't matter who I vote for, you know. And they look at the politicians and they say, mistakenly, they're all the same. And they just don't see anything done that's going to benefit them. In fact, you know, in our current climate, they see that in Washington and they see that certainly here in Ohio.
You mentioned that people, you know, there's a drop-off in voting, so they'll vote for certain races, and then when they get to the judges' races, they just skip it, don't even vote at all. Was the intention with adding that R and D maybe to help people with voting for judges, or do you think that people just don't understand how to vote for a judge?
Well, they can get information about the candidate. We had a program at the court that was judicialvotescount.org, and it was a website, and you could go to your county and you could see who was running for judge, and you could read you know, their answers to their questions, and then they would supplement those answers with whatever's happening along the way, if they got this endorsement or, you know, that sort of thing. So you could stay abreast of it. it moved from the Supreme Court over to the Bar Association to run. And there were dollars from the legislature to support this program. And now I understand they're taking a break from judicialvotescount.org. So I don't think that that's available for judicial education about judges right now. I think that's a disservice. I really do, because people used it. And I know that, you know, people have told me what a great thing it was for them. And it was. So people, you know, they have to work to find out about judges. Obviously, in this day and age, you can Google anybody, mm-hmm. anything, whether you're getting the right information. It's important, you know, to maybe look at how local papers, and I mean like community papers, mm-hmm. You know, they pay attention to these kind of races, and they can be, you know, a source of information as well. So, you know, I invite people to just go to a you know, judicial presentations about, you know, the candidates. Go to a candidate's night. Ask questions. You know, mm-hmm. be proactive. You'll find it's interesting, mm-hmm. and everybody should do it.
And before we take a break, I wanted to get your opinion on the current race. There is one Democrat in a statewide office, Jennifer Bruner. She's a Supreme Court Justice. She's up for election. And there is a whole slew of Republicans. The primary has, I can't remember now if it's five or six, running against each other. So that primary is a competitive primary. What do you make of that race with having, you know, one Democrat in statewide office elected right now, up for re-election, and that slew of Republicans trying to?
Well, Republican, you know, slew will reduce to one candidate, and that right. one candidate then will be, you know, have the party and the, you know, the powers that be coalesce and promote whoever that is. And as I said, as you said, Jennifer Bruner is running for reelection. She's mm-hmm. been Secretary of the State. She has been on the court. She is, in my mind, a true public servant. But again, she has the D. And yes, it was intentional by the legislature. In 2020, there was some losses in the judiciary, and certain members of the legislature were horrified that their candidate lost in areas they shouldn't have lost. Well, they did that in their minds because those people didn't realize that they were Republicans. So how are we going to fix that? We're going to put the designation so people will know who the Republicans are, and this won't happen again. And quite frankly, it's been successful. I think it's, I commented on it earlier. I think it's so wrong to try and pin party labels on judges. I don't even like it when an article is written and they refer to, refer to me, for example, as the Republican Chief Justice. Mm. That's laziness on the part of the media to do that kind of a shorthand because it means absolutely nothing. Or in the federal court or federal system, they'll say a president appointed that federal judge. Again, the same shorthand they're trying to, you know, use. And that's laziness. And I think it does a disservice to the public.
Have you, since being out of office, have you endorsed in any races? I mean, or would you endorse someone in this Supreme Court race
mentioned? I'm not involved in that. I've got so many organizations or efforts, initiatives that I'm involved with help educate the people about the judiciary, educate people about our democracy. Our attention to civics in our schools is dismal. Mm. And that is part of the reason why people feel lost when it comes to exercising their right to vote, their right to protect, you know, their citizens' rights. There's a national, the Task Force for American Democracy, I'm involved in that. Ohioans for the Rule of Law, that's another effort that just, started. That is going to be, it is an institution that will coordinate and organize events. So, and those events are directed at making public aware, mm-hmm. Putting lawyers in schools to explain to kids about the working of the government, their rights, what it means to vote, the history. This is getting momentum. I guess that's the message I'm delivering, is that there is momentum there in this environment, in this state, and in this country, because of what our leadership is doing.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're going to continue our conversation with Maureen O'Connor, former Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court. All Sides continues in just a moment on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour with former Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor. She's a member of a new initiative from Keep Our Republic called the Alliance of Former Chief Justices. Thank you again for being with us today.
Thank you.
So in a 2024 interview with the State Court Report, you talked about being a part of a six-person panel selected to vet candidates for a constitutional court in Ukraine. So you traveled to that country several times that year. Can you tell us about your involvement with that work and how did you get involved there and wanting to work with this war-torn country?
It's interesting, and it is something I'm still involved with. Mm-hmm. I made a six-year commitment in November of 2023, and I've been to Ukraine, I don't know how many times. I can't remember whether it's eight or nine, since then.
Mm-hmm.
It was set up as a very much pro-democracy reform task force. The Constitutional Court of Ukraine is, as you'd imagine, is the most important court there, but it was the least respected because of corruption. Mm-hmm. Ukraine wanted and still wants to be part of the EU. They want to be part of, other organizations. And the EU said, democracy groups, before we consider this, you have to do something about your court system, okay, from top to bottom. So one of the groups that they formed was the one I'm involved with. It's called the Advisory Group of Experts, which is a kind of highfalutin title. But there's six members who are selected. There's three Ukrainian members, and there is a woman from Poland who was formerly Prime Minister of Poland, and there's a gentleman from Slovakia who is active in the ministerial roles in his government, and he's also active in EU activities. So EU said, here's what we do. You get this screening group, and we each have a deputy member. My deputy is a retired federal appellate judge from the District of Columbia. So we get together, and we learn everything there is about the candidates that want to be members of the Constitutional Court of Ukraine. We have a group of lawyers and young researchers that find out all this information from government sources and then devise questions, and then the candidates answer the questions. And so we're well-versed on the backgrounds of these candidates. And the first, goal is to make sure that they have high moral quality, high moral integrity. That's what the vetting process is. Unfortunately, too often their lifestyle exceeds their income, and their rationale for the discrepancy is not always as convincing as they would like it to be. So you have doubts. We have doubts, and they don't make it to the next round, which would be take the written, exam. So many do not make it there, and because we do our job, and the beautiful part of this is that it's live streamed while we're interviewing the candidates. So the public gets to see what's going on, and the law students in, you know, the law schools there get to do it. At one point after we were interviewing for the day, I went and spoke to several law schools, and they wanted to talk about it, and they were really interested in what we were doing and how, you know, it's all for the direction of reform. And
wow.
They were all supportive of that. So I really have confidence in the younger generation of the country. You have to understand that Ukraine was a Soviet, part of the Soviet Union, therefore had the Russian mentality of government, which is corrupt, just corruption upon corruption. All of the, and in the post-Soviet era, so many of the countries that broke free, like Ukraine, in 1991, retained the culture. And it's even now, and that's what you have to deal with.
I feel like we could spend a whole hour talking about out corruption in Ukraine. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with former Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor. Before we run out of time, we mentioned this briefly earlier. Your portrait as Chief Justice was moved from a prominent spot in the Grand Concourse to the Education Center in the building's basement. In April 2025, a new exhibit was opened. It was going. Your portrait's a part of the Women in Law exhibit in the basement. I was just wondering if you've seen the Women in Law exhibit.
No, I have not.
So your portrait was in the Grand Concourse. You were the only woman represented there at the time, I believe. Is that still correct?
That is true.
Do you know if there's any women portraits in prominent spots?
No, there's not. And that was the reason that I wanted that portrait in the Grand Concourse. That's where school kids come. That's where the, you know, public, you know, comes through there. The only people they see are the faces of, deceased white men. Going back to, you know, the 1800s, some slave owners, you know, that sort of thing. And I just felt that we needed to send a message, not just to young women, not just to girls in, you know, in the grade schools that are coming, but to the boys, too, that, hey, this is a job that a woman did. You know, she was on the court for 20 years, and 12 of those, she was the Chief Justice, you know, and if she can do it, maybe I can do it too, you know, and just enhance the respect for women in the law. And I'm not in favor of a special, you know, we're going to put these women in the law in a corner and here's a little exhibit about it. Put it throughout the court where people see it, you know, and people say, well, it's down in the basement, you know, in the education center. Yeah, that's not where people go every day, you know, they come in there. It made me sad that happened. I heard from a lot of the employees that they were saddened because they loved walking by the portrait, you know, every day. And it was like I was still there.
They say hi to you.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a smiling portrait. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, I'm smiling. I'm standing up. I'm smiling. I'm right at the edge of the bench in the courtroom. It's a really, and the artist did a beautiful job. And I'm not just saying, you know, because it's me, because I'm not vain. but for the quality of work, it is absolutely gorgeous.
Well, and you accomplished a lot of firsts. You know, before you were on the Ohio Supreme Court, you were the first woman to serve as lieutenant governor.
No, I was second.
Second woman.
Second.
I'm sorry. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Second woman to serve as lieutenant governor.
Nancy Hollister was George Voinovich's lieutenant governor. And then when he left to go to the Senate, you know, there was a gap and she became the interim governor.
Oh, right. Yes. For that 11 days.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes. We'll give Nancy Hollister her
due. I don't
want to
take anything away from Nancy.
We're not taking anything away from Nancy. But in the 2 minutes we have left, we have a woman running for governor right now, Dr. Amy Acton. So if elected, she would be the first woman governor in that position. So party affiliation aside, what do you think of the prospects of a female governor in Ohio?
I think they're good. I really do. I think that you know, people need this is a election for governor where the candidates could not be more different than one another, which is unusual. Usually we've got, you know, two white men that are running and they're, you know, tell me the difference. OK, but here you have a contrast. You know, I know Amy. I've worked with her, and you know, as she says, she's a public servant her whole life. She's a doctor her whole life. That's what she's dedicated her life to, public service. And I think people respect that. I think people respect that in a candidate. What have you done? Not what have you done for me lately. It's what have you done in your career, and what will you do? And that's what people have to ask that of any candidate for any position, and get engaged with the whole process. I would hope your listeners would just appreciate that and really get involved in, especially in our gubernatorial.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. I feel like we could have spent 2 hours, 3 hours talking about all of the things you're involved in.
I'll
I know you're very busy.
I'll come back.
So come back and tell me more about the Ohio rule of law, part two. I want to know more about that. So we've been talking with former Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.